I knew she was nervous when she sat down. Her breathing was quick and her eyes were darting all over the room. How can I help? She was an inmate at the Denver Women's Prison. I was her chaplain intern. I'd sent for her after I got a note indicating her request for spiritual counseling. "I have some questions about God," she began. Her questions turned to worries. Her worries turned to shame. She wondered if God loved her, if God could ever love her for who she really was. And she was sure that even asking the question was a sin. Listening to this strong, wounded woman and getting to know a little of her story, a longing began to grow in me. A longing and deep hope that my faith tradition, Unitarian Universalism, would have something to say to this woman and her questions. Something that would meet her where she was and help her become the person she was meant to be. A longing and deep hope that we would be able to walk with her, as we say in our third principle, walk with her on her path of spiritual growth. Now, written on posters and pamphlets, our third principle can sound dry. Let's see if I can do it. Acceptance of one another and encouragement to spiritual growth in our congregations. It can sound kind of dry, but when it's lived out, it looks like healing and transformation. Listening to her that day, a seed was planted in my spirit, deep down, that we would be able to offer her and others like her something beyond simply tossing out God altogether. From her context and her life story, that would have been just as wounding as the notions of God she was wrestling with. So it was a hope that we could be a people and our congregation could be a place where she could grow her ideas about God and expand her experience of God in a way that would allow her, that would in turn allow her to grow a new vision for herself and for our world. That we would have the tools and the practices and the willingness and capacity to go there with her wherever there is, and to walk that path with joy and love and respect. It was a big hope. And to be honest, sometimes I still wonder if we have it in us. If you were here two Sundays ago, you heard my colleague, the Reverend Robert Latham, challenge our congregation and our faith to define ourselves first by what we hold in common, rather than our usual mode of affirming how we differ, our diversity. He recalled the Hagar the Horrible cartoon, where there's a bunch of Vikings in a boat, all rowing furiously, and yet the boat is going in circles and zigzags. And the caption on the bottom has Hagar shouting, "Will you please stop saying different strokes for different folks?" Robert's basic premise is that society invented religion as a meaning-making institution. And in order for us to be effective with that charge, we need to claim a basic set of shared answers to the questions that most people wrestle with. Now, I'm not sure, I can't remember if he said the questions in his sermon, what those questions are he says most humans wrestle with. If not, he'll likely outline them when he's back on the 9th, but spoiler alert, there are 5 of them. I'm going to tell you now. They go like this. Number 1, who am I? 2, how do I know what I know? 3, who or what is in charge? 4, what is my purpose? And 5, what does my death mean? He says a religious community is a group sharing a common view of reality built around unprovable answers to these compelling questions of life. It is from these answers that a religious community extracts its message to the world, This message proclaims that if either individuals or society lives accordingly, they will be transformed. Now, in some ways, Robert's message runs contrary to much of what I have preached and taught in this congregation over the last 3 years. And my first response is to remind him, we need not think alike to love alike. We need not standardize our answers in order to walk together in the service of the Spirit of life and love. And I might also add, as we often say, that each of us holds a piece of the truth, and so we need each other across a wide variety of diversity to better see and experience a greater whole. Despite these initial misgivings, however, I do hear in Robert's questions the same kind of longing I felt in myself when I was talking to the woman about God. I hear his desire that we would be more practiced and more capable of offering a life-affirming alternative theology translatable to a variety of contexts, and that we would be able to act in response to this theology that we all had a sense of, that we were able to name and claim and then live out of. I hear his longing that we would understand why these questions even matter, what theological commitments ground our third principle, as well as the other six. And so, as with most things that Robert preaches on, I think I'm on board, with one slight reframe. So nearly a century ago, the Reverend Louis B. Fisher, Dean of a Universalist Theological School, published a treatise on universalism. His opening chapter, entitled Which Way, begins with this well-known quip. Universalists are often asked to tell where they stand. The only true answer to give to this question is that we do not stand at all. We move. He goes on to say, we grow and we march, as all living things must forever do. The main question with universalists are not where we stand, but which way we are moving. Not what positions we defend, but which way we are marching. So rather than a single fixed identity-based answer to Robert's questions about our common view of reality, perhaps our living tradition would be better served by asking ourselves again, which way are we marching? And with whom? In service of what? In Fisher's treatise, he answers the which way question with a lot of words about Jesus and God, but ultimately he sums up the direction of the universalist movement as moving towards abundant life. Universalists march with all those who serve and create abundant life, in service of abundant life, so that all may have abundant life. Nearly 100 years later, it's still a very good common view of reality, I think, or at least a good place to begin. Now, before I went to seminary, I have to confess, the conversation with the woman about God would have terrified me. I mean, I wouldn't have known what to say or how to listen to her. I'm not sure I identified as an atheist exactly, but I definitely didn't do God. Which meant that despite being very active in my UU congregation, I had really no tools or language, no practice being present to and with big theological questions. All I had was what I didn't believe, and I had avoidance. My UU church taught me very well how to avoid conversations like the one she wanted to have. Now, it's hard to remember now what motivated this avoidance strategy in me or in my church, but mostly I think it was fear. Fear, I think, that we couldn't really be together across our differences. Fear that if I shared my beliefs, that it would sound dumb or contradictory, that I'd have to prove it. Or maybe most of all, I was afraid that whatever I said would mark me with a label that was fixed on me forever, and then I would be set across a table or an aisle or a room or a computer screen from others who were pinned with other labels that were fixed on them forever. And then we'd have to debate about who was actually right or who actually belongs. This is my nightmare. And unfortunately, having it as a fear is not unfounded. See, in our attempts towards spiritual growth and along our search for truth, Unitarian Universalists have often been sucked into this kind of labeling and debating mode. Just these past few months, you may have noticed another round of debate running through the UUA about the so-called pendulum swing of humanism and theism. In our own congregation over this past year, prompted by the retirement of our longtime senior minister, there has been some parallel questioning and debate, often referencing the conversation at the association level, and asking if we can claim more explicitly which we actually are and where we stand. Now, while some of this conversation can be, it has been quite meaningful and insightful, a lot of the time, this either-or approach makes me weary and makes the old practice of avoidance seem like a very good idea. Except for that longing. Except for that hope that that conversation way back planted in me. And so I can't give in. I still feel it, that hope that we could meet her there. Which means we have to find another way. Another way to discern our shared answers, a way that is not debate, a way that moves us out of our heads and into our hearts, and a way that prioritizes relationship and honors our commitment to moving rather than standing. That says which way? A way of describing our common view of reality that transcends labels and instead makes space for, as our second reading from Tom Owen Toll puts it, the creases between mysticism and humanism, theism and naturalism, believing and doubting, devotion and skepticism. Which brings me to my two semi-contradictory conclusions. He said, if you didn't catch the beginning of where Howell read, Tom Owen Toll often describes us as writers of paradox. So it's fitting. My two final conclusions are somewhat contradictory. The first conclusion is to say that the way forward is not to delegate this work to the broad and generic Unitarian Universalist Association. For us to experience a new way, we need to do this from the ground up, in congregations, and in the context of real relationships. As the principle says, we encourage one another to spiritual growth in our congregations. Here, everything we do here is a part of this work. Small groups, adult ed classes, spiritual practices, the discovery sessions with the search committee, teaching our children, and most definitely all that we do in ministry teams to serve within and beyond our church. In all of these, we have the chance to ask one another and ourselves, to reflect, to listen, to practice our answers to some of life's biggest questions, and then to listen one another into speech. And to promise one another that no matter what we say, we're not going to fix it forever and say, okay, I get you, you're this. I stand here, you stand there. But instead, a discovery together around what does it mean to be human? I don't know. What is our purpose? What does our death mean? Who or what is in charge? What, if anything, do you understand or experience as God? And how do we decide any of our answers to any of this? These sorts of conversations, when grounded in listening, hold the promise of transcending the either-or debate and what Unitarian ethicist James Luther Adam called the hardening of the categories. Because in such conversations, to say it plainly, it's no longer about those theists or those atheists. It's about my friend's story, my group's heartbreak, my community's greatest love. You may be disappointed to learn, however, these conversations will not result in a vote. There's no winner and no loser. Sorry. But over time, these conversations allow us to recognize our common view of reality, as well as the true places we differ, and how that's okay, because our commonality is big and wide and deep. Which brings me to my second somewhat contradictory conclusion. Now, although I maintain that this theological construction and spiritual discernment remains the work of each particular gathered covenants of community, as a centuries-long faith tradition, we do inherit a theological framework, our common view of reality, which we might also call our good news, that remains ours to claim. And so I want to end with my sense of that Unitarian Universalist common view, and we'll see how it sits with you. Here it goes. Number one, being human means you matter, that inherently your life is precious and worthy of love. And it means being a part of a great interdependent web of life where we are all in this together. Two, we don't know what happens after we die. Our focus is on living a good life now. And what makes a good life is doing our part to create what Martin Luther King Jr. called the beloved community, a world of peace and justice, kindness and love for all. Three, though we might wish otherwise, we know we aren't in charge. Not entirely. However, we can choose how we respond to our lives as they unfold. These responses across all time and space are what drive our world forward. Our actions make a difference, and showing up for one another in our common vulnerability and courageous love brings the hope of healing and transformation. Four, we describe God in many different ways, or in no way, but our common view is that no one knows for sure. And no one answer is sufficient, which leaves us with an ultimate posture of humility. If we talk about God, that God is love, courageous love, infinite love. We are held in this love, we partner with it to heal ourselves and heal our world. Five, finally, as the holy reveals itself in ever new and surprising ways, we turn to all sources that keep us moving in the direction of more life and more love to help us sort out our answers to these and other big questions. We draw on our own life stories as well as our encounter with others, and we seek to keep faith with the liberal religious vision that over many centuries has affirmed the goodness of humanity, the love of God, and the need and our capacity to keep working towards justice for all. There you go. Our common view of reality. I'm sure it isn't 100% for 100% of you, and I'm sure that some of you wish I'd use a few different words. But my guess is that if you listen for the underlying intent, it does work for most of us. So when Robert comes back in a couple weeks, you can just let him know the work is done. Just kidding. Kind of. It's been almost 8 years, and still the conversation with that woman won't let me go. I still believe that we can be the place that could meet her in her struggles and walk with her. I still believe in our capacity for theological imagination, spiritual depth, contemplation, and service, a place that can be present with tools and companionship no matter where your spiritual quest may take you, that we could meet you there and walk alongside you in the direction of life abundant. Love abundant. I still long for us to lay down our avoidance strategies and instead lay claim to our common answers to life's big questions. Not by way of debating about static categories, but rather from within our moving, breathing, covenantal, heart-growing, living tradition, where we don't stand, we move. And when they ask which way, let us say, towards life, abundant life. Blessed be. Amen.